The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
Hey, what's up, folks? On this episode of the Will Cain Show podcast, we talk with Wade Phillips. He's the son of one of the most iconic coaches in NFL history. Somebody that can not just spin a yarn, but perfected the country witticisms. I talked to Wade Phillips about his dad, Bum, plus all of his head coaching stops in the league because Wade holds the record for most head coaching gigs in NFL history. We talk about what it's like to work with Jerry Jones and who the best defenders are he's ever seen. I really enjoyed talking to Wade Phillips, who's got a book out entitled Son of Bum. You should check it out and listen to this podcast with me and Wade Phillips. Thanks. In your book, Son of Bum, I want to talk to you about your dad to start this off. Son of Bum, you talk about your dad, Bum Phillips, as one of a kind. He wore a cowboy hat on the sidelines. He wore cowboy boots. He had, of course, his famous sayings. And you describe a guy who was a product of a time who couldn't exist in today's NFL. Why? Why do we not have more Bum Phillips in the world today?
Well, they let you be your own personality in those days. I mean, they didn't. There's not going to be another coach on the sideline with a cowboy hat and a pair of boots on. So, there's not going to be a fedora hat with Tom Landry or everything went corporate. Everybody's coach speak. You know, they got to say the right thing, and the PR people are telling them this and that, which, I guess you got to do. I don't know, but all that changed,
It definitely did. You don't see guys like you just described. You don't see guys like your dad. Of course, one of the most notable things about your dad wasn't just his cowboy hat and his cowboy boots, but was the things that he said. I have my favorite Bum Phillips sayings, but I'm curious, which one is the one that was the life lesson or the mantra or the one that stuck in your head for your entire life?
That one was really coaching isn't bitching, I mean, he told me way back that, hey, you can't blame it on somebody else when you should have taught them better. So that was really one of the key ones for sure.
You talked about in the book, you said coaching isn't bitching, meaning it's not just yelling at them, telling them what they did wrong. But you also described, Wade, that you can't just let them believe whatever they're doing is right as well. You got to hit this marker in the middle of honesty. But I imagine that's easier said than done, right? I imagine players in some situations will walk over you, and I imagine other situations everybody errs into being some kind of dictator. It's probably a pretty hard line to walk, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's something that it's not easy, but it certainly happens where people think, well, you're too soft or whatever, if you're not a hard ass. But my dad, he always felt like if you treated people right, they would treat you the same way. But you'd still have to have respect. You have to get that respect. So he and he always had that.
One of my favorite sayings, and I've said it on this show several times on the Will Cain Show, is, and I believe I've got this correctly attributed to your dad, was, I think in talking about Bear Bryant, why he was the greatest coach of all time, is he could beat you with his'n, or he could turn around and beat you with urine, meaning didn't matter which squad of talent he had, which matter of players he had, he could beat you with either squad. You think that's right when it comes to establishing who's the best coach?
Yeah, I think it's a great. I think it. I mean, I said it about Belichick. Repeating that, I mean, he could take his team and beat yours, but he could also take your team and beat his. I mean, that's a great coach that could take either team and win. And certainly Don Shula was that way for sure.
You talk about when you were in high school, you played linebacker. Talent level, you said, and your athleticism wasn't up to everybody else's speed, but you could see the game, you understood the game, you studied the game. That always had you a quarterback and linebacker, and it gave you an advantage. I've met a lot of guys who've played in the NFL. One of them, for example, Zach Thomas, who seemed to be that same kind of player. I've always been curious, Wade, is that something that is taught? Can you learn that in the film room? Or are these young athletes that are born with the ability to sort of see the game ahead of time, have a mind that just works within the game? I'm just curious how much of that is innate and how much of that is taught.
Well, Zach could do that. I had Zach, you know, and with the Cowboys. And, yeah, he had that natural innate ability to be able to do those things. He was, you know, as you know, he was a great player. But no, I couldn't do it at quarterback. I was a decent linebacker, but I wasn't a great quarterback. So that's why I played linebacker in college. But it takes, you know, certain abilities people have. There's things you can improve on, and that's what coaching is. And even if they have great ability, they've got to have a want to get better. And I think coaches can help even the great ones.
That kind of leads me to one of your dad's other quotes that I found the most fascinating, which was, there's two kinds of players that aren't worth a damn. Those that do everything you tell them to, and those that won't do anything you tell them to. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, you get guys that won't do what you say. I mean, you can't have that kind of guy. But the real good ones, they have that innate sense that even the coach tells them to do such and such, but they make a play. They have a tendency to make plays even though you didn't tell them to do that way. You know, I had J.J. Watt at the Texans in Houston, and we had him, and, you know, first thing we noticed was, you know, he'd be running around the block, and, you know, and coaching wise, running around behind the block is no. I mean, coaches go crazy about guys that run around behind the block because they can't make the play. But he would run around the block, the backside, and make the tackle. And you say, no, yes, great job. and so, but some coaches would never let him do that. I mean, you know, you have guys that they can do things even though you tell them not to do it that way. They have an ability to do it. And J.J. is one of those guys that just can make those decisions. Quarterbacks have to make decisions. All players have to make decisions whether they can make the play or how to make a play. And it comes up more times than you think.
You mentioned J.J. Watt. One of the advantages of having coached in so many different places is you've absolutely coached some of the best of all time, from J.J. Watt to DeMarcus Ware to Von Miller to Bruce Smith to Reggie White, and early in your career, Ricky Jackson. Who's the best defensive player you've ever seen?
You know, Reggie, I had Reggie in like his second year, and I think the third year, his third year in the league, we had a strike, and so players didn't play but 12 games that year. And so Reggie had 21 sacks in those 12 games. Now, that's the best season of any guy. I mean, you know, the best I could ever. It's a Babe Ruth number. I mean, it was unbelievable for that time or any time for a guy to be able to do that. So, I think that year with Reggie was the greatest, even though all those other guys you talked about are all great players and Hall of Famers. And I've coached some other Hall of Famers too. So, but Reggie that season was the best ever.
The only other guy you seem to put in the conversation in your book, Son of Bum, was Bruce Smith. But you said they are two completely different types of players. Reggie White and Bruce Smith just approached the same position very differently. How's that?
Well, Reggie was a powerful, you know, both of them could run fast. Reggie was a big, powerful guy and used his power. He would overpower people. Aaron Donald has that same trait, you know. But Reggie would just overpower him. He could run around him, but he had generated enough speed and power to just run through him or overpower people. And then Bruce could run around people faster than anybody, you know. So he could had a great bend. They talk about or see guys bending around the corner. Well, he was tall, but he could bend real low and go around and make plays that way. So both of them had their own way of doing it.
How about today's game? As you look around, you mentioned Aaron Donald. You coached him with the Rams. Of course, Von Miller when you were with the Broncos. But you look at today's game, who's the best defender in the game you see today?
Well, I'd say Aaron Donald and, of course, Von Miller's still up there. Aaron Donald and J.J. Watt are the best defensive linemen, you know. So there's some other really good ones, but, you know, I'm a little partial to those guys, but I know they're both just tremendous players and done things that nobody else has done. They've got five Defensive Player of the Year awards between them.
It's natural you'd be partial to guys that you've coached in the past, but I've also read you're wanting to come back again. You're ready for another opportunity, so I was curious if you might say somebody out there that you'd be looking for to coach in the future.
Well, let me have them. I'll put them on the list. Hire me.
It's true, though, right? You're wanting to get back in the game. You're not retired yet.
No, I'm not. Hope not to be, but we'll see what happens.
Well, as we mentioned at the start, it's six head coaching jobs throughout your years in the league. It's the most of anybody in the NFL. If you look back at all those stops, what was the one that was the biggest miss in your mind? Meaning it was the best opportunity, but it didn't come to your full vision of what could have been accomplished.
Oh, wow. As a coach, you think all of them, you know. You think if you just had one more year or whatever. We were number one in defense at Buffalo, and we lost the Music City Miracle game. And I was 29-19 there, and I thought we had a chance of going further. But that's the reason I wasn't a great head coach, I had a good winning percentage, but, you know, we just didn't win enough in the playoffs, and I think that's the key to being a really good or great, great head coach. So I never did accomplish that. So that's why I think, or I hope I was a pretty good defensive coordinator.
I think the evidence is in on that. But why do you think you had trouble in the playoffs? I believe the career record was 1-5 in the playoffs. You point out your regular season record. It is well above 500. It's a very good record as a head coach. I believe I have that right, 1-5 in the playoffs. What was the difference for you in the playoffs?
I don't know. Hopefully we just our team overplayed what they could do and got beat in the playoffs. I mean, you want to coach them. You want to be good enough to coach a team to be better than they should be, I guess you'd say. I'd like to think, well, we coached them up really good, but we played teams that were better. I didn't do good enough. So that's the real answer in the playoffs as a head coach. But did pretty well. I've done pretty well as assistant coach and being able to help win games. So I think that's my forte.
Well, I appreciate that humility, Wade. I do. But, I mean, I think your success is well established. And, you know, the thing is, when I talk to a lot of people who are successful, the presumption is we're talking here because you are a successful human being in this life. I always am fascinated with failure, though. I'm fascinated from a business perspective, from entrepreneurs, from coaches, from everybody, because it seems like that's where all the life lessons are learned. I've seen the quote. It's famous. You know, failure is a much better teacher than success ever hoped to be. So I don't ask this because I want to focus on the negative. I'm just curious if you approach it the same way. Can you tell me what's your biggest failure?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I've always gone to the next one, you know. I mean, I believe you just do the best you can do. And if you feel like you've done that, well, then that's good enough. And it's not a failure, especially in football. I mean, it's a game. You know, if you lose, and I've lost Super Bowls and lost some years, lost more games than we should. But I've always just been the other way. I'm gonna do the best I can do, because there's two kinds of coaches: the ones that've been fired and ones that are gonna be fired. So you can't say you're a failure just because you don't win or somebody fires you. I think you just do the best you can do, whatever you do, and I'm happy with that.
Let me ask you about two things when you give me that philosophy, and I believe you. I've read the book. I read Son of Bum, and you talk about moving on to the next thing. You know, it happens. A lot of this is out of your control. How much of that philosophy do you think has to do with the way your dad's career ended? You know, I see that scene. You draw it really well. He's coaching the Saints. He walks out of a stadium, and a lady pours a bucket of beer on him. And from that moment on, it seems like from your writing, he lost the love. He wanted to retire, and he couldn't believe somebody would react that way to a game. In a world today where there's so much negativity, it seems to me that experience was just so impactful on your dad, and a lot of us will experience it in different ways. It's too easy to give negativity today, right? How much of that right. gave you the philosophy that you have today then?
Well, I think a lot of, you know, that's what you learn as you go through life on different things. And certainly with my dad, you know, I mean, the next day, I didn't know. He didn't tell me. I mean, the next day, Tom Benson comes in and is crying and tells the team, and everybody's crying. And I mean, it shocked everybody. And when I talked to him, I said, you know, because we had won a game, it wasn't. He didn't want to go back to New Orleans. We won a game in Minnesota the following week. So when we came back, he retired, and he just felt like he was ready to retire. You know, I mean, I don't know, shocked him into it or whatever.
That one moment meant so much to him, huh?
Yep, sure did.
The other thing I was curious about is through your 6 head coaching experiences and then all your defensive coordinator jobs as well, you talk about all your interactions with bosses. And I found that absolutely fascinating. How many times a job had been verbally offered and then didn't come through? How many times a guy who seemed to have your back then all of a sudden didn't? It seems to me, and I don't know if the NFL is different than the rest of the world in this respect, but there's a lot of distrust. Earned distrust, a lot that you can't count on. And then here you arrive at this philosophy of control what you can control and never look back that much. So how much, besides just your dad's experience, is coming from this place where one minute, you know, the owner of the Buffalo Bills is your guy and the next he's not. One minute Jerry Jones is in on you and the next he's not.
Yeah, you can't control all that. I mean, my dad was, you know, my dad was still that way. I mean, you know, he got fired with the Houston Oilers. And we had, for the 3 years, we had the best record in the NFL. We lost twice the AFC Championship game to Pittsburgh. They won the Super Bowl. We lost to Oakland in the playoffs. They won the Super Bowl. And we got fired. And he never looked back or he was never mad at Bud Adams and said, hey, I worked as hard as I could. And he paid me every day I worked, and, you know, I always appreciate that. And really, that's the philosophy I've kind of carried with me is, hey, I worked hard for these people. I tried to do our best I could do. And, you know, it wasn't good enough in their opinion. But I said it before, hey, they fire good coaches, too. They don't fire – if they just fired bad coaches, then I would feel really bad. But they fire a lot of good coaches. Belichick got fired at Cleveland. I mean, people don't remember that, but I mean, it happens. So you got to look at it one way or the other. You got to be bitter, or you got to go forward. And I choose to go forward.
You know, I don't know if you know this, Wade, but besides being a football fan and a talk show host on ESPN, anybody that's ever paid any attention to who I am knows I'm a massive Dallas Cowboys fan. I grew up outside of Dallas in Sherman, Texas. I know exactly what you're talking about in the book when you write about Friday Night Lights. And I was there with you through all those years in Dallas. Tell me about Jerry Jones.
Jerry's a great family guy. You know, I mean, you know, Jerry Jr. and Steven and Charlie are all part of the team and organization and work with him, work for him. So, and he includes you in his family. So, I mean, that, you know, he took Laurie and I on the plane to the Arkansas Derby. I mean, you just when you're there, you're part of the family. So that's really the neat part of it. You know, and as people should know, I mean, he's a very personable guy. You know, he's outgoing and a lot of fun to be around. You know, at a party or anything. So, that part was great. And then the other part that people don't realize was good was he was the general manager. Well, you know, as being a head coach, a lot of times you have to go through the general manager to get something done or get a player you want. You know, general managers and coaches don't always agree. And so all you had to do there was just talk to Jerry, because he was the general manager as far as getting players or getting things done or what you needed. You could go to the owner all the time, which, you know, it's hard to go to the owner and talk as much as Jerry and I did. I mean, I was with a lot of owners, but I didn't talk to them a whole lot, you know, just from before game, after game, sometimes tell them how we played, but that was about it. You know, with Jerry, you could, you know, you talk to him almost every day. So it was a lot different, and I think it's better that way, really.
You know, most people believe the popular conception is that Jerry meddles. He's entirely too involved. Was that your experience with him?
No, he's a good listener. I think, you know, and I said, I hope he doesn't get mad about it, but I've said it several times that his expectations are to win the Super Bowl. He wants to win the Super Bowl every year. If you don't win the Super Bowl, he considers it a disappointing year. And he's trying to compete to do that all the time. And you're in for a letdown, you know, if you're trying to win the Super Bowl every year and you don't and you don't get there, you know. So I think that's the only thing with him that I would say was the negative part was, you know, we won a playoff game there first time in, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, I don't know what it was, when we won a playoff game there against Philadelphia. And you know, the next year I was fired. So, I mean, you know, in the middle of the year. So it's just his expectations, you know, that's what hurts any coaches is your expectations are really high and then you don't do as well as everybody expects you to do. So his are really high every year.
And what is the problem?
I don't know what it's bad.
That's what I was going to ask you. What's the problem with having high expectations? That it leads to impatience?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. It expectations to get better and better, but to win the Super Bowl now, you know, that's almost pie in the sky. But he's continuing to try to do that, and that's, you know, and maybe he'll get it done.
It's funny for somebody being in the public eye as much as Jerry Jones is. I think he's also probably not well understood, or at least people always speculating on what his motivations or what's going on. What do you think is going on with the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott and why there's not a contract there yet?
Oh, well, that's all agents and money. And, you know, that's just part of football negotiation, I think. I mean, that goes on everywhere, especially with quarterbacks these days, you know, how much they're paying them and how much that's going to hurt you on the salary cap and all that stuff. So, yeah, they'll get it done. I mean, they're not going to let it go for sure.
What do you think of Dak Prescott as a quarterback?
I think he's getting better and better as he's gone along. And he had a lot of talent to start with. I mean, he played early, you know, takes place of Tony Romo and, you know, which is a difficult thing to do because Tony was a good quarterback. So, I think he's got a chance to be, you know, a top quarterback. He's not there yet, in my opinion.
Not there as a top quarterback. What would you describe that as? Is that top 10?
Elite quarterback. I mean, you know, Mahomes got there pretty quickly because he's just so talented. You know, and of course, Tom Brady's always been there. Seems like, and certain quarterbacks get there for a certain amount of time, and then they may drop off too. You know. So I think Flacco was for a good amount of time. That's my opinion on those guys.
Well, if we believe that, and I hear you on it, it's a window in time, and at any moment one guy could be in and another guy could be out of this elite status as a quarterback. Who are elite quarterbacks today in the NFL?
Oh, wow. Well, like I say, Mahomes got there pretty quickly. Obviously, Tom Brady has been for a long time. There's some that might get there. I mean, And then the new breed of quarterback, with, you know, Lamar Jacksons and people like that, where they can run with the football, adding that college touch to it. You know, Cam Newton was certainly there, you know. He was the MVP and at that point. So it's just different guys getting to that level, I think. But there's only a few great, great ones, and Tom Brady certainly is that guy.
So one of the things I loved about Son of Bum was your career history. Anybody that's been through so many different experiences knows what it's like at different franchises under different coaches. I wanted to ask you about a couple that you paired not just this experience with, but I think some real honesty. For example, Tom Landry, of course, is a legend, but what I gather in the book, your experience with Tom Landry, at least in a job interview, it wasn't the best. Is that right?
Well, I don't know about it wasn't the best. He really just wanted to know about the 46 defense, you know. He interviewed me because we beat him, you know. I was with Buddy Ryan, and we were running the 46 and at Philadelphia, and we beat him. And it was a new defense, and he wanted to know all about it, really. And so he brought me in to interview me about all that stuff, but I don't know that he wanted to hire me. Because when I asked him, he wasn't going to change, you know, the flex defense, what he called it, what the Cowboys ran for a long, long time. So, but I think he just wanted to pick my brain up as far as what we were doing to try to beat us. I don't know.
You had a similar situation with Marty Schottenheimer, at least the first time around with the Redskins, right? Where you have to question whether this is a real job interview or job interview designed for some other purpose. In Tom Landry's case, maybe to pick your brain. With Schottenheimer, what was the situation?
Well, I didn't know it. I went in and interviewed with Marty for the Redskins job, and you know, we interviewed for 3 hours. Marty was a 4-3 guy, you know, so I had to explain basically everything I knew or what we would do with the 3-4 and how we taught it and so forth. Real thorough interview. And then I get back to Buffalo, and a guy calls me and says, hey, Marty's saying, well, he's got it down to you and his brother, you know, as to who he's going to pick, who's the best, you know. And that's when I called him back and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, because I knew he's going to hire his brother. I mean, don't make me look like, hey, I'm not as good as your brother, you know. And just tell me, hey, you know, I'm going to hire my brother rather than interviewing me. So that's how that went the first time with Marty. Now, the second time was different in San Diego when I interviewed there and he hired me.
And that is where your philosophy comes back into play, right? You go on to the next one. I guess you try not to take it too personally because he did end up becoming your head coach a second time down the line.
Right. Now, A.J. Smith was a general manager who was with us at Buffalo. He was a general manager at San Diego. And when Marty called me to interview, I called A.J. and said, hey, I'm not doing this again. And he said, no. He said, we're going to get, we want you as a legitimate interview. And I said, okay, I appreciate it. So so we interviewed for about 3 or 4 hours with Marty. And I went back to the airport. And, Marty said, hey, he said, I got some other guys to talk to, you know. And I said, well, I do too, you know. And got back to the airport to get on the plane. And Marty calls me on the cell phone and says, hey, we want to offer you the job. I said, okay. I said, let's talk about it. So we did.
I've got three quick questions I want to end this interview with, but I want to tell you what I thought coming away from the book. It seems to me, Wade, that somebody with your experience having been in so many different places, you just have the opportunity to see so much of the NFL. And you have so much, not just in personnel and not just in culture, but in ownership and in cities. It's just, and what I take away from everything in reading your book is you never know what's going to come around. You can't take the failures too hard. You can't think things too personally because it's all going to come back around. It's a small business. I don't know if that's what you feel or that's what you communicated, but as I read it, I mean, the value, the wealth of information or experience in your book is what is the big takeaway. And then how you bring that into, you know, being the son of Bum Phillips.
Yeah. I mean, that's, Well, just like you said, I was out 2014. I was out. Didn't have a job. Nobody hired me. I had three guys that said if they got a job, you know, they'd like to take me with them as a coordinator. It's great. They didn't get a job. So I didn't have a job in 2014. Then luckily, John Elway and Kubiak got together in Denver, and they hired me there. And we win the Super Bowl in 2015. So I'm out of a job. Too old, I guess, or whatever at that time, or couldn't get on, or wasn't good enough. I don't know, but didn't get a job. And the next year, we win the Super Bowl. So that's, I think that just reiterates what you just said, I think.
All right. So here's the three questions I want to ask you as we go to the end of this interview here. Right. Number one.
Hey, you do a heck of a job with your show. I hope you know that. It's fun to watch. I like your perspective on things.
Oh, I really appreciate that, Wade. I would never have known that,
sure.
So that always means a lot to hear.
Sure. I mean, it's true.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm real proud to have you on the show and to hear about your life. I'm not just saying stuff because I don't give gratuitous compliments.
I know. That's why I like what you do.
Well, thank you so much. So then let's do something heartfelt here outside as we come to the end. Outside of your dad, which it's clear, your life is incredibly impacted, and not just impacted, intertwined with that of your dad. Outside of your dad, who would you say are your three biggest influences in your life?
Wow, three, huh?
Is that too many?
No, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, my college, because my dad coached me in high school, and my college coach, Coach Bill Yeoman, who's still here in Houston, and we go by and see, and was a big influence. I think coaches have always been influences on me anyway, you know, not just him, but other coaches my dad coached with or coached for. You know, so Coach Bill Yeoman was really, really a key guy there. And then Dan Reeves really was a big influence. And the thing about him, because I worked for him twice, and the thing I guess I really appreciated most was I took over for him in Denver. And a lot of times, if you take over for a guy, you know, because they fired Dan, I was still there, they hired me. A lot of times, if you take over for a guy, they feel like you, or people feel like, hey, they stabbed him in the back to get the job, all those things, you know. And he hired me again, and I just thought that took a lot to do that, you know, that kind of thing.
One of the things I find interesting about you putting Dan Reeves in there is when I read the book the first time around, I thought you were at first had harsh words for Dan because you guys are so different. You said he was so fiery and his veins popping.
He's a lot different.
But being different doesn't mean he wasn't a good big influence on your life, obviously.
No. He won 200 games. He was a great head coach, too. But, yeah, we still keep in touch, and, you know, Dan and Pam are still real good friends of ours. He influenced me a lot off the field, too, I guess, you know, because we had dinners together and things like that with Pam and Laurie and I and Dan.
And then number three?
Okay.
No, the third influence. You got Dan Reeves and your college coach.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't give me your third influence.
Well, I mean, Laurie and I have been together 51 years now. We've been married for 51 years. And, you know, without her, I wouldn't be where I am either. So she's been a great influence. Because, you know, you go through hard times and you need somebody to pep you up sometimes. And she's special, and coaches' wives are special because, you know, they raise the kids themselves, you know, basically, because you're, you know, because you spend so much time at your job, but she's influenced my life as much as anything, for sure.
Smart man. Good answer. I want to ask you about one of your dad's quotes, because what I love about his quotes is there's so much simple wisdom in it. You know, it seems like just a country ripcord on the conversation, pull the parachute and get out, but it's not. It's buried in country witticism and philosophy. And one of my others that I liked a lot is when you guys had Earl Campbell, And he failed the mile test. He failed his physical conditioning test. And your dad's response was what?
Well, the media, just like they are today, they all run up to him and say, Bum, what are you going to do? Earl didn't make the mile. He said, well, hell, if it's third in the mile, we won't give it to him. But he also said, but we'll give it to him the rest of the time, which we did. So, he had great common sense. My dad had great common sense. We went through a lot of things where, you know, what should we do? This, or this. And he'd say, well, I think we ought to do this this way. And everybody go, wow, why didn't we think of that? Yeah, that makes sense. So he was great at that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not just a joke. It's just basic common sense. Well, we're going to still give it to Earl, but if it's a mile away, maybe we'll hesitate. Otherwise, we'll keep giving it to the great running back.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
All right. And the last thing I wanted to ask you, Wade, is look, as I said, you've coached, and I've got it written down here, in New Orleans and Dallas and Buffalo and Atlanta, in Houston and in Denver. You've been defensive coordinator and everywhere from Los Angeles to, I don't know, I can't even remember them all, Wade.
Buffalo, I've been everywhere.
What's the best city?
Well, the best city to live was San Diego, just the weather, you know. The best city for me is Houston because I'm living there now. And, I've been with both Houston teams, and I went to University of Houston, and I got a lot of friends here, and a lot of ex-Oilers are here, still here, you know. So, and I know there's a lot of NFL players live in Houston, so and a lot of guys I coach for the Texans, so it's a great place for me.
Well, Wade, not only do I appreciate the time you give me today, I appreciate the compliments you gave about the show, and I appreciate your career, and I'm glad to get to talk to you about it and all of your experience and wisdom that you've acquired. I really, really thank you for all this.
Well, I appreciate you.